This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
This is The Mainframe. Welcome to 2016, everyone. This is our podcast back after our holiday break. And by holiday, I mean, of course, the release of Star Wars The Force Awakens. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great. Yes, definitely that was Star Wars Day more than anything else for me.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. We've been talking about it in this show, and of course, just when we're hanging out. And it was much more than I anticipated it was going to be. I mean, opening night, I remember being 6 years old, going with my aunt to opening night of the original Star Wars, A New Hope, and that excitement, because it was something new, it was something, nobody knew what to expect. It was, there was sort of this atmosphere, and being a little kid and being with my aunt, it was kind of like this kind of cool experience. And then we did the midnight showing at a small theater with the whole family and my kids, and that same energy was in the air. It was that same kind of anticipation and that excitement of an event. And there were kids there that were probably 5-6 years old, and there was older people there. And one I heard and overheard somebody say something about they were talking to a gray-haired lady, and it was her 85-year-old grandma was there at this late-night showing of Star Wars.
Yeah, the room we were in was also a tiny local theater, and the cinema manager came in and he gave this speech about, I haven't seen it yet, so if I see any glowing screens, you're going to be ejected with no chance for appeal because I don't want it spoiling for me. And I thought that was kind of cool. The thing I don't like about cinemas is people talking or texting during the show, so it was really cool that he came in and said, this has to be a perfect experience for him, let alone for his customers. And it just showed how important it was that everybody had a great experience. But as well as that energy of excitement and anticipation, I could tell all the people of my age were kind of nervous that it was going to be another Episode One experience as well.
Yeah, it was kind of that. It was kind of cool seeing. I specifically chose to see it in a small theater, more intimate setting for that opening day, because it was like sitting in a room with 100 of your nerdiest friends that all want to see this together. And there, that same type of thing, the cheering, the gasps, the laughings, it really was like watching it at home with 100 of your closest friends. And that feeling, that experience is something that my kids, I mean, we've gone on to see it 3 times. Actually, some of my kids have seen it more because they go out with their friends and see it, and they've seen it tons of times. But that whole experience of being able to share something that you know that you have been looking forward to is a good analogy to kind of segue into what this topic that we're talking about today, because I think that that's one of the things that, we tend to think about with products, building something we want and then delivering it to a customer versus figuring out what the customer or your audience wants and building that. And I think that was what we ended up with the prequels versus the new Star Wars, is the difference between a product that was built because Lucas wanted, this is what he wanted, and just forced it on the audience, versus, Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy and the whole crowd that's doing the new Star Wars is really catering to what the audience wants, right? Yeah. I mean, that's really the point of delivering a solid product.
Exactly. And the people who are defending George Lucas are saying that Episode 7 has sold out, that it's fan service, that it's just a checklist of everything that the fans wanted Episode 1 to be, and that it's not different enough. Whereas I would say George Lucas gave us something brilliant, and then with Episode 4, 5, and 6, he went back and made them worse with his messing around. And then because he didn't have anybody telling him, no, George, that's stupid, with Episode 1, 2, and 3, he went so far away from what people wanted that he downplayed his brilliance in a way. He actually should have listened more. And I think that feedback and having a sounding board and people to listen to is everything we talked about with the MVP, where you need to get that feedback. It needs to be collaborative, and you need to not just be so headstrong that your creative vision is all that matters, right?
Right, because you have to, you know, there's this featureitis, the sense that we need to add the latest cool thing or build the coolest thing. And that's not really what this is about. And that's what Lucas fell into, the trap of, you know, using CGI, what was available at the time, the coolest thing, and now it looks horrible, or not focusing on the core storytelling. And you're seeing that with a lot of products that happen. I mean, Twitter is one that's happening now. I mean, actually, it happens with Twitter all the time. They always try to shoehorn some piece of crap feature in there and expect everybody to use it. I mean, think of the Moments that came out, and they switched the tabs to kind of force people to accidentally click on Moments because they were used to getting their notifications in that spot. Any feature you have to trick somebody into using is not a feature. And now they're talking about expanding it to 10,000 characters.
Yeah, Twitter's whole raison d'etre is that it's under whatever characters, and it allows brevity and enforces some creativity. So now they're saying that, hey, you don't actually need to be brief. You can have 10,000 characters. It's ridiculous. But the stuff that we're actually asking for, like fixing the spam problem, the abuse problem, allowing editing buttons, they're just ignoring. They took away the share counts on the API. How about fixing that first? Give us the share counts back. Nobody's really asking for 10,000 characters. And the people who want that have got workarounds. Anything from screenshotting the text and sharing it as an image through to using things like Medium.
Yeah, we already have a hipster long-form sharing platform, and that's called Medium. And so we need to think about what the customer wants, and the customer will tell you what they want. I mean, that's what you were just saying. I mean, think about the share counts. That's a perfect example. That's something that got a lot of people up in arms because there's social proof in seeing that the share counts of things. And that's something that people actually want. And you know, think about this. You see this all the time. People will say, I would be willing to pay monthly or yearly for Twitter to avoid all these crappy promoted tweets or to be able to use the share counts. And we're not asking to use it for free. There are people that say, hey, I would pay for that. But instead of listening to what the audience wants, they're more interested in kind of changing it into something else and trying to, you know, create the hot new product. And the problem you have with that is you kind of get caught up in your own thinking. Instead of listening to what the customer wants and trying to deliver that, you get caught up in trying to determine, this is what I think the customer needs and I'm going to do it. And you know, one area that you see this a lot is with people in the arts. You know, that's one of the reasons they have a hard time sort of selling their stuff, because it's so much a part of who they are. I mean, you run into this a lot in that field, right?
Yeah. Artists don't want to sell out. And a lot of the time, people who feel they're creative or artistic, they want to sell what's inside of them, and that's a good thing. Or on the bad end of the scale, it's, this is what people should want. You know, my taste is infallible, and taste is not a subjective thing to them. It's a, you know, I'm right, you're wrong. And you get into trouble. And I think that's George Lucas again with the CGI that you mentioned. He went back to the original series and he made Han shoot second, and he put all that use of CGI and was not necessary, but he thought that's what people would want and he could do it because of CGI. So it's like, just because you can do it and just because you think it's right doesn't necessarily make it right. And working out what your audience wants and needs is not necessarily selling out. And I think the key difference is you have to stay true to your values, but at the same time, find a market for what you're doing. Now, if you're purely doing art and it's a creative endeavor and it's a creative outlet, then create what you want and then see if anybody's willing to buy it. That's fine. You know, if you paint a picture or if you create some music, see if there's an audience for it after it's created. But if you're in business, then you have to find that intersection between what you have and what people want.
Yeah, art for art's sake is one thing. Having a creative endeavor and a creative outlet is important. And ultimately, you may find that people do want that, and that's great. But something you said about sticking to your values and then putting your own unique approach to that is really what you can do to kind of balance that. Because it's the difference between selling out and sticking to your values, but still creating a product that the market wants, is figuring out what it is that you find that is your unique values and your unique selling proposition. And having that unique perspective is something you can bring that is you know, unique to you. And by doing that, you're kind of infusing the product with your specific perspective without selling out, but you still have to sell. You still have to be able to, you know, market the product, because the whole point of being in business is to make money.
Yeah. And I think we can go back to Star Wars Episode 7 with this. And my counterpoint to the people who are saying it's not original enough and that it's not a unique film is I've only seen it twice, which, you know, surrounded by nerds who have seen it a dozen times before, it sounds lame. But the first time I went, it was almost with a little bit of fear that this was going to be another Jar Jar moment. And I actually went back to my old blog post that I wrote when I saw Episode 1, and I gave it 6 out of 10. And the second time I went back to it, I gave it 7 out of 10. And it's a similar experience with this, except I went in fearful and it was everything I hoped it would be, but it kind of washed over me like a big wave. So when I went back, I could watch it. The new characters I engaged with immediately. And that's something new. The new characters, I think, were excellent. And we knew it was going to be big because every time a trailer would come out or every time an interview would come out, they put such emphasis on it being back to that old universe, that used universe with the practical effects. We knew he was listening and we knew he was a fan. And so I think when you connect with your audience in a real way and you show that you share values, then you've won people over a lot more than saying, here's my thing, you should like it, whether you do or not, you should like it, and take it or leave it.
That's right. And then you will be able to make money, and people will be happy about that.
The Mainframe is brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, a complete website solution for building your own online marketing and sales platform. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform. Stop trying to hack together your website yourself. Head over to rainmaker.fm/platform today and get back to building your business.
Because think about how people felt when they saw that this movie was actually making money. I was cheering, probably not as much as the studios, but to see them break all these records, because I was happy that the movie was making money. Because here is something that, you know, told an incredible story, had integrity, you know, had a lot of fan service, and was making money. There is that aspect of it that money in business is a measure of success. So one of the things you'll run into a lot of times when creating products is you have, you know, the segment of your audience, or unfortunately, if you're like some people, you have an entire audience that doesn't want to see you make money, that it seems like you're doing this for some altruistic reasons, which, yeah, that's great. But the whole point of business is to make money. I mean, even nonprofits have to make enough money to, you know, sustain the business, and then, you know, not above that. The idea of doing this for the sake of doing it and not making money and then calling yourself a business, then that is not the right audience for you, right? Yeah. Chris, you really need to look for people that will be happy to pay for what it is that you're bringing to the table.
Yeah, people who pay value you more. That's just a given. And I've seen it over and over again. And when I started out with my own blog, I came out of a community where they got everything for free. And then I was giving away a lot when I started, well, rebooted my blog in 2006, 2007. And then the first time I put an email out, a blog post out that had a dollar sign in it, I got all this hate back. It's like, why are you doing this? And, you know, all you wanted was to sell us something, you dirty spammer, you know, all these horrible things. But I had a segment of the audience that was willing and happy to pay for something that was of equal or greater value. And they were the people I had to focus on. And I have such low self-esteem and lack of confidence that it really hurt me when people were saying these things. People who would previously have commented and said nice things were suddenly turning their back on me and essentially saying that my business blog should be about business, but not be a business. But you can't listen to those people. So if your audience has people in it that are not happy for you to be in business, or even worse, hate you for it, you need to find a new audience.
Yeah, and the big thing here is you learn to balance that by meeting and exceeding expectations. Because if the product you ultimately deliver provides the value or a value above what they expected for what they've paid, then you start to get to that core audience that not only is willing to pay for it, but that knows that you are going to meet or exceed their expectations, that you provide value with that product, and they will continue to be your customer for a long term. And that's really what you're looking for here.
Yeah, and they'll become your advocates. And that's what we're seeing with Star Wars as well. Tony, you mentioned the records that they were breaking just with pre-orders, and then with the first day and then the first weekend, and you know, now it's the biggest movie in history. The fans are sharing this information and they're cheering along, as you know, this is almost like a sports team. It's something we've done, you know, it's our team and we're the top of the league. If you get it right, the fans, the customers are on your side and they become your advocates, and they'll sell for you by sharing the good news of, you know, you are delivering on your promises and it's actually even better than you would hope. The negative side is bad news travels around the world faster than good news can put its shoes on. That's a Terry Pratchett quote that I've mangled, by the way. And it's true, bad news travels at light speed. So if you do a bad job, people are going to hear about it, and that can almost drown out the good.
Yeah, I mean, Jar Jar is the very definition of buyer's remorse. And if you think about how buyer's remorse reacts to the marketplace, or how people react that have buyer's remorse, you're going to have two types of approaches. One, where people lash out. So they go on social media or through other channels, start saying that I'm unhappy with this product, it is not good. But even worse sometimes are the ones who don't say anything and just never come back, and they never become your customer or your advocate. So there's this silent majority that will not say anything about how poor the product is. They may just ask for a refund and go away, but it's still going to impact things. So it's key to remember that buyer's remorse is something that kind of forms like a cancer, and it keeps breeding, and you need to make sure that you stop that early on. So let's say you did make a mistake and you delivered a product that maybe wasn't at the expectation you needed. Take that feedback and turn it into something, because you can now actually, if you can turn a customer around, you may actually even maintain them for longer, because you've actually addressed their remorse, made it better, and enabled them to be more part of your environment again, and brought them back into your community.
Yeah, and perception is everything at that point. The perception that they're being heard is, first of all, paramount. Even if you don't actually think that they have a real grievance, they need to be heard. And then secondly, you have to look at, do they really have valid feedback? And then you need to either correct the mistake or mitigate it somehow very quickly. And I had an experience over Christmas. I ordered a 3D printer that I was looking forward to. I wanted to build a BB-8. And unfortunately, I missed my deadline of having it built for when I wanted to have it done, because the printer arrived broken. In this community, we do unboxing videos for each other, and I started doing an unboxing video and I had to turn it off because I was swearing. It arrived broken and with an Australian power cord. And so I went back, and this is a test of their customer service. And they told me I had to buy my own North American power cord. So that was strike one. Strike two, I had to fix the printer myself. Fortunately, I had another 3D printer so I could print parts. And so my initial excitement turned to frustration and buyer's remorse.
And if you think about it, that right there was a test of the product and of their customer service, which is a key point of creating a good product, is that iterative process. And in the next episode, we're going to talk a little bit about how to test the product in the marketplace, how to use that feedback to iterate, and how to come back and deliver the product that will not leave people with buyer's remorse and make them an advocate for your product.